Getting into club football is a 90-hour a week on the first year on your job. You can tell by the grey hairs and the bags under my eyes that you're in by fingernails on a daily basis.
Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Offside with me, Taylor Twellman. I hope you enjoyed your weekend. I'm looking at you, LA Galaxy fans, and you, FC Cincinnati. Just because we're not talking about you doesn't mean we don't see you. Those two teams on identical records. Six played, three wins, three draws, no losses. Only the Galaxy have 13 goals scored to Cincinnati's six. And I'll tell you what, they've got my attention.
Lucho Acosta, when the deck is down, when they need him most, always finds a way.
Through seven match days, this league has been full of twists and turns, like Colorado's comeback at home versus LAFC.
Mihailovic again! A thing of beauty from the Rapids for their first lead today.
The Sounders went another week without a win. Trouble in Seattle. And how about the Philadelphia Union? The third undefeated team in the league, yet somehow, someway, they are seventh in the East.
The Philadelphia Union make it two straight wins. Jim Curtin's side pointed in the right direction.
The league is full of surprises, and this weekend will be no different. Saturday kicks off, Miami facing a visit from the up-and-coming Colorado Rapids. Meanwhile, the Columbus Crew take on DC United. FC Cincinnati have the Red Bulls, and Vancouver will host Toronto. And in the late matches on Saturday, Minnesota are in action against Real Salt Lake, and Sunday wraps up with the Timbers heading to Kansas City to take on Peter Vermes and his boys. The stakes are rising, the surprises keep coming, and you can see everything only in one place. MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Coming up, I'll be talking with John Herdman, head coach of Toronto FC, now in his first full season with the team. They were dead last in 2023, but seem to be, I know it's early, turning it around so far in 2024. Now, John will get very candid about the differences in coaching internationally versus club teams, his struggles with mental health, and why his ultimate goal in Toronto is to be the first team to win four competitions in 1 year and complete the quadruple.
It's going to take time, but you don't know. Like, sometimes it just happens because all the stars aligned. That could be this season.
But first, El Tráfico is this weekend, and I'm not sure it has ever been as difficult to foresee what's going to happen in this rivalry than this Saturday's edition. On one side, you have LAFC, the black and gold trendsetters of this league, who have finished above the LA Galaxy in all but one season since joining Major League Soccer in 2018. And on the other side, the team that has won the MLS Cup more than any other team in this league, the LA Galaxy. But they've also suffered the indignity of watching their rivals parade one MLS Cup, two Western Conferences, and two Supporters Shield wins through the city, right under their noses.
And now, your 2022 MLS Cup champions, LAFC!
But this year, the Galaxy are the team that's cooking with gas, entering the match undefeated with the second most goals scored in the league. They've been nothing short of outstanding under Greg Vanney. They're playing their game, dominating with the ball. Peck, Painsil, Jovlich, able to attack open space while Ricky Pooch pulls the strings.
Painsil trying to run in behind again. Painsil, really good football. And that one goes through the goalkeeper in it.
Back out top. Ricky Pooch. And it's 3-0 LA.
And on the other hand, LAFC, 5 points behind the LA Galaxy with very mixed results. One weekend, you score 5 goals against Nashville. But if you take away those 5 goals, they've only scored more than once in 2 games this season.
3 straight games without a goal for LAFC. Certainly some problems, but not time to panic just yet.
And where this all gets amped up for me is in this derby, form is never a clear indicator of what might happen. In 16 league matches, we've had 5 draws, 7 Galaxy wins, 4 LAFC wins, and 64 goals scored. Split basically down the middle. You actually have to go back to 2021 to find a league meeting with fewer than 3 goals scored. So this weekend, it's all set up for a banger. El Tráfico always delivers. Both teams with points to prove in an environment where logic and reason go out the window. Saturday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Do not miss it on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. For more weekend reaction, head over to MLS YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, and TikTok, Taylor Twellman _. You could join the conversation like offside listener Christian Castro, who thinks Chucky Lozano would be the perfect first designated player for San Diego FC. Christian writes, Lozano would be ideal. You get the Mexican fan base. You get a player at the right age, similar to Carlos Vela. End quote. Christian, I couldn't agree more. And I know there are very few senior Mexican internationals in Major League Soccer. But when I look at what LAFC did with Carlos Vela, that's exactly what Lozano would be for San Diego. I actually think he may even be better because of his age and where he is in his career. The latest rumor, however, for what it's worth, Christian, is that San Diego are looking at Memo Ochoa to be their opening day goalkeeper. Now, will he be a DP? We don't know that yet. But over 150 appearances for Mexico, having played in 5 World Cups, that experience is invaluable to a new franchise in Major League Soccer. But I'm exploring Chucky Lozano if I'm Tom Penn and company for San Diego FC. It's a no-brainer. Now, I was really looking forward to this conversation because John Herdman came in as a head coach at Toronto FC at the end of last season to a team that sat in and remained in last place in the league, their third wooden spoon. But lucky for Toronto, John Herdman knows a thing or two about leading a team through transition. He's been at the helm of not one, not two, but 3 national team turnarounds, the New Zealand and Canadian women's and Canadian men. And now full transparency, yes, in our first preseason episode, I did say I was, quote, selling Toronto. I was in the camp that he wasn't the right choice, namely because he's been in the international game for 10 plus years. To flip the script and get into the club scene for a team with this kind of turmoil, not the easiest of situations. But so far, so good for Toronto FC fans and President Bill Manning. They fell to 5th in the East this weekend, but they're still just 2 points off the front runners, FC Cincinnati, very much in the mix at the top. Now, in my conversation with John, I was struck by his honesty and thoughtfulness. We get into some real difficult points in his life, like a disappointing 2022 World Cup finish that included some perhaps misplaced hubris on his part.
Their manager, John Herdman, created some noise after Canada came up short in their first World Cup match in 36 years. He elected to spin things forward to the second group game in this motivational manner.
I just showed them they belong here, told them they belong here, and we're going to go and F Croatia. That's as simple as it gets.
And we also get into the off-the-pitch struggles he was going through at the time. A note to our listeners, this conversation includes mentions of suicide. As we talked, it's clear to me that all these experiences have made John a better leader. What really shone through is how much he believes in his staff and the process to turn Toronto around. John, I appreciate you taking the time. We're catching up after a little bit of a frustrating result at the weekend, just your second loss of the season. Yet here we are sitting, you're 2 points off the first place spot in this Eastern Conference that is going to be a complete zoo. Through your eyes right now, have you all kicked your coverage a little bit?
I think coming out of that game, you know, we were just frustrated. Massive opportunity missed. Mm-hmm. Like, we went into the game saying with 3 points at home, you could be top of the league. And Toronto, top of the league, after everything that happened last season, would have just been an unbelievable statement, I think, for everyone. There's a little bit of inconsistency there. We went from moments of sublime to just self-destruct against Kansas City, but defensively, the way that we're able to force teams to come out of their style of play has been really a big part of what I'm proud of with the group and saying, okay, that's on track. The identity, the fact we're finishing top every week in the running charts, and we've got DPs bought into that. We've got guys who were, you know, stripped of confidence last year, sort of buying back in to just giving their everything for the club. That's on track. The piece that's missing, the clarity and the ruthlessness.
How much fun are you having right now?
Oh, I'm loving it. Loving it. You'll not know my backstory, but I moved to Toronto on my own. So I've left my wife, my daughter, and my son behind in Vancouver. My daughter was clear, Dad, I'm not moving to Toronto. She's 13, and my son plays in Vancouver as well, so that's going to be interesting this weekend. But my family have afforded us the opportunity just to go all in on the job. And I said to them, look, international, you understand creating high-performance cultures, high-performance environments. You understand the cadence of tournaments and these cycles of 10 days. But getting into club football is a 90-hour a week on the first year on your job, like 90 hours. And you can tell by the gray hairs and the bags under my eyes, like you're in by fingernails on a daily basis. There's just a lot of new things, but loving it.
John, I want to go back a little bit. I want our listeners to get a full picture of John Herdman. You're a coach who specializes in transformations, transitions, however you want to phrase it. But go back to your history. You joined the Canadian women's team who didn't even make it out of their group stage in 2011 World Cup. You took them to a bronze medal in the Olympics in 2012. Then go to the Canadian men. They were ranked 72nd. They're ranked 33rd in the world. In your opinion, and I know it's different, apples and oranges, international club, but what is the one thing you do when you go in and say, hang on a minute, I'm changing this. This is how I'm going to do it.
Oh, what a question. So we've developed a framework, and that framework involves more than John Herdman. It involves a group of people mm-hmm. who've lived these experiences now over 15 years of going into these sort of situations, which require transformational leadership, reset of the high-performance culture. So we have a framework that couples tactical excellence with team spirit, and then underneath that, we have a set of principles, and then we create an overarching framework for the players that there are just processes now that we follow to get an alignment to a shared purpose, a commitment to certain principles, and then rituals, routines, and processes that allow you to behave your way to your purpose. So all of it sounds like Tony Robbins, but you know, it's worked. It's worked wherever we've gone, and there's a group of us. I said this to Bill Manning when I took the job. This isn't like a job for John and two assistant coaches.
Right.
Like, if you don't afford me the opportunity to bring six people, it takes around that six people to transform a culture. We literally go out to the 76 people in the whole organization, from the guys who work on the pitch, to get them part of our, we call it a train to win culture, and get them understanding the principles that how they contribute to our success.
John, who was the biggest influence on you?
I think like influences in terms of cultural was my time in New Zealand.
Yep.
That was a unique experience. Like leaving England and coming out of, I was working in a Premier League academy there, and you were indoctrinated into a really dogmatic way of thinking. And, you know, the English have that arrogance about their football as well. So coming to New Zealand, you were the other side of the world where no one cared about football, like nobody. And now your influences were, you know, the All Blacks coaching team, the All Blacks performance analyst, the Black Ferns coaching team. And what New Zealand created was just this really fertile environment for young coaches or any coach to cross-pollinate. Coaches were fast-tracked. I got put on an accelerator program, which meant like young, talented coaches were in New Zealand put around the top coaches from all these different sports, whether it was hockey or rugby league. And we would be in environments with guys and women that had 30 years of coaching experience winning championships in their fields. So I think that to me was the biggest influence that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. Like this linear football, like stuck in that pigeonhole that football coaches, I think, get stuck in. So that's where I feel like the cultural, the spiritual element of human performance became a big base of my coaching foundation.
Was there one little bit of advice or something that our listeners would be intrigued that you took from that New Zealand experience that has nothing to do with football?
I think it had to be the Maori culture, the elements of Maori culture that really opened me up to the spiritual side of sport. With my Olympic experience with the New Zealand women's team, there was a Maori leader who was actually a player in my team. And, you know, I thought I was good at the team building, the psychology of teams, but she just opened us up to understanding the core of purpose and connecting people to purpose, but also doing it in a consistent manner through rituals. I think that was something that opened my eyes massively to, you know, what it really takes to create these brotherhoods, sisterhoods, these teams that just will give everything, regardless of the money, regardless of the fame, the fortune, whatever comes with sport. So the word is in New Zealand, whānau, and it means family. And she really taught us, you know, what that means in a sporting context.
I think it's awesome that you're taking your first club job in Toronto, because for me, I live in Boston. Toronto's a great sports city, and I've been there many a times for different reasons. But the way they support their Maple Leafs, the way they support the Raptors. But look at Toronto FC specifically. They're the only MLS club to ever win the domestic treble.
Treble, yeah.
MLS Cup, Supporters Shield, Canadian Champ. Do you feel any pressure to get this team in this franchise back to that level?
Absolutely. You know, that's been, if you ever come in, you'll see the mountain image, and it's around the environment, and the mountain is the quadruple. That's what we came to do. Mm-hmm. You know, year one, year two, year three, whatever it takes, or whether I lay a foundation for someone else to take it to that quadruple. You know, the club's been suffering for a long period of time. But that's the mission that Lorenzo, Fede, everyone that's in this environment currently, from the groundsman, they know the quadruple is our mission, to be the first team to hit that. It's going to take time, but you don't know. Like, sometimes it just happens because all the stars aligned. That could be this season. You never know. We've had a lot of injuries to start with at the beginning of the season, but we're still sitting right in the fight. So, you know, it's not about, you know, taking just little baby steps. It's about, you know, taking this apex predator in the East and putting the teeth back in it and, you know, getting to fighting again. And that's the starting point. I think that's what people will see. They've seen a fighting spirit. And you look at our game against Kansas, you know, at the weekend, they weren't able to build out of their own half because our teeth are getting sharper. The boys are really starting to connect around this aggressive identity. So slowly things are changing, but you never know. It might move quick.
I think for all of us on the outside, the biggest talking point for the last couple of years, Insigne, Bernardeschi, how does John Herdman come in here, get them bought in, get them rejuvenated, whatever the buzzword you want to use, John, everyone on the outside used it. However, when he scores the goal, Lorenzo Insigne, against Charlotte, and the celebration after that goal.
Listen to this place roar! Toronto FC have their breakthrough!
I noticed that.
Yeah.
I noticed a player that looked bought in. I also saw teammates that looked like they had him on their side. You know where I'm going with this. How did you handle that part of the job initially taking over as the head coach of Toronto?
I think keeping it real, like wherever job I go into, I always look at the opportunity to work with great people. Like, you know, with the women's team, it was Sinclair. With the men's team, it was Atiba Hutchinson. You know, there's some great people in that room, and you've got to respect where they've come from. You've got to really respect their knowledge, their experiences. So the first step was to, you know, bring Fede Lorenzo into the leadership group. You know, give them a platform to shape the environment, and then bring in Sean Johnson, who was just what a guy, like what a leader, you know. And they put work in. Like, as I say, we have a process we do with the leaders to get them to a point where by the beginning of the season, they've created the rituals that we manifest every day. Like all of this is, it sounds like hocus pocus, but it's how you keep men focused and consistent towards a common goal. So it's been a real process where they bought in because they've had to put time in over the Christmas holidays while they were away in Italy, Lowe's being on the calls, Fede's being on the calls, Lowe's being like, we've had translators so we can get his points across, but now I've got Osorio translating for him. So Ozo's been learning a bit more Italian. So like you can see when guys do little things like that, they just get connected more. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know, when we had a tough moment, which was the loss to New York, you know, the question was, could we respond? You know, championship teams, they respond. You lose a game, you respond. And I'd said to them, this group of staff, for 13 years in Canada, we never lost a back-to-back game. Never. Mm-hmm. In 13 years, yep. Men or women, yep. Until we went to the World Cup. And we had some easy teams like Belgium and Croatia.
Yeah, yeah, easy teams.
Yeah, first ever back-to-back losses in our time. And I said, look, if we are real, if you're real as leaders, we cannot lose this game. And because it's not the real Atlanta team, and yes, we've got injuries, you have to win. Mm-hmm. You have to win. Mm-hmm. And if you don't commit your mind to that, this team are going nowhere. And that was a big moment for the team because I think if we'd gone back-to-back losses,
yep.
The scars would start opening up and people would question the leadership. So it was massive. So we've got another response this weekend, you know? Vancouver away, right in my hometown. Let's go.
Exactly. And that's not an easy game. However Vancouver goes about their business, week in and week out, they're just a difficult team to play. But what's interesting to me, John, when you're talking about Lorenzo and Bernardeschi and the way you're trying to get them bought in, I would say to anyone listening to this interview, your success this year is what you get out of the young players, what you get out of the group. And I think, John, and you know this from studying the league, the best managers in this league, yes, they manage players 1 through 10, but the ones that manage players 18 through 24, 28, they're the ones. Wilfer Nancy is the first one that comes to mind. That's when you can really build the juggernaut where now you can lose Lorenzo for the next 6 weeks, but you've got Spicer, you've got other players that can come and do well. Am I missing the beat here?
No, I think you're spot on. And in terms of our staff, like our staff structure, I operate probably more on a horizontal leadership in many ways. Because I know, like, I've got, for example, Alex Dodgson, who's 29. He's working with Shaquille, Spicer, Kobe Franklin. And I know as a 48-year-old man, like, I am so far away from that group of people now. Mm-hmm. Like, the generational gap is frightening. And, like, I've got a 19-year-old son, you know? So they don't want to be treated like dad-son relationship. Like, they want to be a mate. And for me, like Alex, who's the wingback coach, is working with them every day. Then he takes them for their game reviews. They've built a little group of these young men who are open-minded, actually. But I know if I was in that group, they would like cower up. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just being smart, like putting the right people with the right people and knowing like what your weaknesses are. My weaknesses are I can't relate to 21-year-old, 19-year-old kids. Like I can't relate to them. Whereas I go into his meeting, he's got this dance music going on in the background and they've got the whiteboards, the posters up, and I'm like, man, I'm just crusty now. Yeah, I'll work with the older fellas.
Yeah, but by the way, that 19-year-old plays for Vancouver and MLS Next Pro. There's got to be a family bet on the game this weekend, no?
You know what? He won't talk to us about it, eh? Because he's harboring hopes he's going to get on the bench. Then to be fair, you know what? I've said to him, look, if you play, like, you're going to get smashed in the first 5 minutes. Just know that. Like, you are going to get smashed. Someone is going to smash it. So He's loving it, man. We're having a little bit of a wind up, but deep down, he's a TFC fan now. With me being here, he's enjoying watching it.
I was watching with a real interest with you guys, Canada and the World Cup. Obviously, it didn't go the way you wanted it to. What did you learn most about the World Cup experience personally?
No, I don't piss the Croatians off. Yeah, that was a starting point. You know what? There was a decision I had to make in June. I felt in June there was a lot went on. There was the strike with the men's team, like we pulled the games. I lost my sister in a really terrible way. And the whole high of the World Cup, like I was just done. You know what I mean? You know when you're just done? I went into this strange funk where it was like, yeah, I think the biggest learning I had around the World Cup is I should have trusted my gut, which was, it wasn't for me. And when I got there and how it unfolded, it was like, we had a great game against Belgium. Like, brilliant match. Like,
agreed.
Proud as punch to see a Tiber and should have won that game, like 3XG, everything. Then we went to the Croatia match, we scored our first goal. And then ultimately, the expectations and just like, I don't know, it felt like a place I shouldn't have been. And if I trusted my gut in June, I was quite happy with where I was at and ready to reset myself because, you know, for those that weren't aware, like, you know, I lost my sister to suicide. Right after the World Cup qualification. And I'd sort of made a commitment to her that I would help her, and I didn't. I put everything into qualifying that team for the World Cup. And it's never left us, eh? That stuff never leaves you. So you qualify for the World Cup, the highest high. Then 3 weeks later, you lose your sibling and... you could have done something about it, and I didn't. And that, just that juxtaposition of that high and that low, I struggled with it big time. Yeah, I had some tough moments to the point where even after the World Cup, it never felt right to go back to Canada. There just wasn't something right anymore. Yeah, I was all over the place, to be honest. It was a tough one.
I think rightfully so.
Yeah.
I mean, in any sense of the calculation of this thing called life, you lose your sister in the manner that you lose it.
Yeah.
John, how do you find yourself out of that dark tunnel then? How do you do that?
Being tough, I'll tell you. In the world you're in, Taylor, you've lived this. I mean, you've probably had your highs and lows, you know. But this world doesn't give you, this industry doesn't give you a break. Like you have to be on. So yeah, I mean, I had to get some help. I'll be honest about that. I had to get some help. It was the first time I've ever felt weak, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the first time life's like hit you in that way. So, you know, for people out there, I mean, lucky I've got people like Robin Gale in my life who, helped navigate us through a really tough period. Yeah, it was tough. The June, July, August, September. Whew, man. Yeah, that was tough.
John, I'd argue right now that's made you a better leader. The fact that you admitted to yourself you needed help. Am I right?
Yeah, because I think it's just the empathy. You know, I think if anyone had worked with us, you know, particularly around that World Cup period, for 2.5 years, I was just too performance orientated. Like, you know, this is it. We are qualifying. We are qualifying. We are getting this done. And that was to my detriment. So with that, it's made us more open to a reality that other people have other realities outside of this mission. Mm-hmm. And that you've got to be ready to invest in people that need help. They're not all there to help you achieve your mission. You've got to be ready to help outside of the grass, the whistles, the tactic boards. It's a big learning. It's come at a hard price, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, those are prices that sometimes when we all get together, you sit there, you have a beer or two or 12 beers, and then you realize, holy shit, people have really lived a life. And here you are, you're only 48 years old, John.
Yeah.
It's a full life already, my man.
Man, I'm looking rough, though, I'll tell you. Oh, shit. If you need that, someone keeps showing us this. Look at a picture of John Erdman before World Cup qualification with Canada. Look at a picture. Going to like Haiti and COVID. Yeah, I think that was the start of like everything. Everything just starting to fall apart. COVID trip to Haiti to qualify. My God. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I can. I absolutely can imagine. This weekend, the game against Vancouver. How important is that for you?
It's important. It is. I mean, important because I get to go home for the first time in 3 months or something. I see my dogs. That's why it's important. I've missed my dogs more than anything. I'm there to win. But if we don't, well, that's life.
What kind of dogs, by the way?
Man, I've got one we call Pointless, which is this white Maltese thing, which my daughter ended up with in COVID. Like, we just call it Pointless because we don't know its reason for being. Like, it's just, like, you can't take it for walks because it won't leave your side. It once picked up. And then I've got my Cavapoo. My Cavapoo's Rosie Lovehug. Oh, my God, she's the softest. She's like a cuddle buddy. Yeah, I miss them, man. I miss my dogs.
I appreciate you taking the time, dude. I really do. Nah, best class. Of luck. And I feel like we'll talk again later on in the year because I feel like you guys are going to surprise some people.
Well, we'll do our best, but thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks to John for being so open about his personal life. I think it takes real humility to do so. If you or someone you know needs support, go to apple.com/heretohelp for resources. If you are in the U.S., you can call 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline and speak with a trained listener. There's always more I want to talk about that I don't have time to cover in this show, so check out my very own Twelman's Takes that I've got plastered across my social media, Instagram and Twitter at Taylor Twelman, and if you want to find me on TikTok, just an underscore to my name. You can watch my takes also on MLS YouTube, but I want to hear from you. You can email me at offsidepodwithtaylor@gmail.com, or better yet, call me 646-571-8496 and let me know what you think we should talk about on an upcoming show. And if you're still listening, give us a rating, review on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to follow the show so you never miss an episode. Offside with Taylor Twelman is a Major League Soccer podcast produced by Apple TV and Rain Delay Media. Our executive producers are Peter Moses and John Yales. Isabel Angel is our editor. Michael Janot is our engineer. Jonah Buchanan and Iggy Monda are our producers. Music was composed by Brian Decker, and I am your host, Taylor Twelman. Follow and listen on Apple Podcasts.
Oh, man. You know what? I actually found out what its reason for being. So these little dogs, apparently, in medieval times, were bred to turn the spits on, in kitchens. That's what I've been taught. We're like, we had to find a reason for this bloody dog.